from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny. In this hour of Forum, changing the rules for dogs in Bay Area parks. Federal park officials have unleashed thousands of pages of proposed changes to dog regulations for the Golden Gate National Recreation Area. If adopted, the new guidelines would ban or restrict dogs in places they're now allowed, like parts of Crissy Field, Ocean Beach, Fort Funston, and Muir Beach. Officials are trying to balance the diverse needs of dog owners, children, bicyclists, plants, birds, and, of course, dogs themselves. And that's no easy task. We'll hear about it all this hour on Forum, and we'll get started right after this. Good morning and welcome to this hour of Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer and today for Michael Krasny. Well, few issues arouse the passions of people like dogs, especially when you talk about putting limits on where, whether, and how dogs can frolic off-leash. On Friday, the Golden Gate National Recreation Area, or GGNRA, released thousands of pages of proposals, including some, if enacted, that would either restrict or ban dogs from parts of Crissy Field, Fort Funston, Ocean Beach, Muir Beach, and other parks in Marin, San Francisco, and San Mateo counties. The public is now being asked to weigh in on these proposals over the next 3 months, and we're going to give you a chance to give your thoughts this hour as well. Joining us, Howard Levitt, Director of Communications with the Golden Gate National Recreation Area, the GGNRA. Good to have you with us. Also here in the studio with me, Brent Plater is Executive Director and President of the Board of Directors of the Wild Equity Institute. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And also here, Martha Walters. She's Chair of the Crissy Field Dog Group. Welcome to you, too.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
No one has a dog with them this morning. Are they parked down in the lobby? Let me begin, first of all, with you, Howard Levitt, if I can. Just give us a sense of what we're talking about. I don't want anyone to be confused about which parks we're talking about. This is not Golden Gate Park. It's not your neighborhood park. It's all the parks in the federal system in the GGNRA. Just describe that a little bit.
Well, the Golden Gate National Recreation Area is arguably one of the most loved parks in the national park system. There are 394 national parks around the country. We are one of them. The park was established in 1972, designed to preserve the scenery, the natural and cultural resources, and the recreation values of the lands that comprise the park. And we are spread over three counties, Marin County, San Francisco County, and San Mateo County. The park is remarkable in a lot of ways. It includes an extraordinary number of rare and endangered plant and animal species. It includes national icons like Alcatraz Island, the Golden Gate Bridge, Muir Woods. It includes a huge number of historic resources, and it's beloved by one and all in the Bay Area.
Give us a sense of what's in this proposal. I realize it's thousands of pages long, but what's your goal? What are you trying to accomplish?
Our goal in creating this draft plan, and I really want to emphasize that it's a draft plan. We're at the point now where we really will need to hear from the public. But our goals really were trying to create a plan that did several things. One, it created a balance among the needs and aspirations of various users. And, of course, it won't surprise anybody to know that desires for use of the park span a very broad spectrum. So our job as the National Park Service is to create some balance. We wanted to provide a variety of visitor experiences. Naturally, as a National Park Service, as an agency charged with protecting resources for the future, we had to make sure that anything we put forth would protect resources. We tried to create something that would be understandable, something that would be enforceable. And now we're at the point where we need to hear from the public as to how well we did.
And you say this is a draft proposal, but a lot of discussion, a lot of meetings have gone into this. I mean, you've been talking about this for the better part of a decade, right?
This issue has been with us for actually several decades, but really about in the last 10 years or so is when we really rolled up our sleeves to try to create a little clarity in a situation that's quite confusing to most people, I think, who visit the park.
And what's spurring this? Why is there a need other than the lack of clarity? What does that lack of clarity lead to?
Well, there's a couple of things that are driving the creation of the plan. Number one, the Golden Gate National Recreation Area has been out of compliance with the national rule that governs all other national parks in the system. And that rule requires that where dogs are permitted, that they be on leash. We have been operated with a different philosophy for the first almost 40 years of the park now. But in the last 10 years, it's become evident that as visitation has increased, as conflicts have increased, as resource damage and threats have increased, we really needed to create a unified plan that created a little bit of order and consistency and was, at the end of the day, wise and appropriate for our national park area.
And why is it that San Francisco or the Bay Area, the GGNRA, has played by a different set of rules?
Well, the park, of course, is an amalgamation of a number of units, former military lands, some state park land, some city land, and all of those areas had uses that predate the establishment of the park. And the Park Service recognizes that the Golden Gate National Recreation Area is unique. We have a unique set of circumstances. We're proximate to a huge metropolitan area. We include some of the most prized recreation lands in all three counties in which we reside. And these differences allow us to create a rule that it will be specific to the park. And the draft plan we put out, and again, I want to emphasize, it's a draft plan. We hope has created the right balance.
That's Howard Levitt from the Golden Gate National Recreation Area, GGNRA, and they're proposing several options for changing the rules on off-leash dogs in the Golden Gate National Recreation Area. Martha Walters with the Crissy Field Dog Group. We just heard Howard Levitt talking about the lack of clarity. Do dog walkers feel that way as well?
I think I need to step back for a second and put a point of clarification in here. Actually, the GGNRA is a recreation area. It's a unit of the National Park System, and it's located in a major metropolitan area. So you're feeling the impacts of a large city plus the large environment around it. Second of all, in 1979, the Golden Gate National Advisory Commission promulgated the 1979 pet policy, which allowed areas in Marin and San Francisco to have their dogs under voice control. So this is something that's very longstanding. Dog walking has been an important recreational activity in the GGNRA, and we hope to have that in the future.
And so the rules, as they are now, we just heard Howard Levitt say that people interpret them in different ways. I mean, do you have a sense that your folks, the folks who walk dogs at Crissy Field, for example, have a different view of what the rules are? Is there conflict often between, you know, folks who have their dogs and others who are using Crissy Field?
Actually, there's a remarkably low amount of conflict at Crissy Field. One of the things, especially since the restoration of Crissy Field, it was designed and constructed to address having 70 acres of off-leash recreation there. And so, for example, post and cable fences and vegetative barriers were built around, like, the marsh area and around the dune areas to protect the plants. And I think, by and large, people are very good about being responsible and keeping their dogs out of those areas.
So are you saying that the rules as they are now are just fine? Why tinker with them? Or do you acknowledge that, well, maybe they need to be changed, modified, restricted, or, you know, in some way changed?
No, I think that, you know, the status quo is fine. And, you know, if anything, we advocate for responsible dog ownership. And I think that, you know, as I said before, it's part of what has been going on here actually since the 1880s, just not at Crissy Field, but other areas like Fort Funston up in Marin and San Mateo.
So you're happy with things the way they are now. Why do you think then that there's been this long process? Why are so many other people not happy about it? What's from your point of view?
Well, I think it's a pretty subjective perspective.
It is. That's why, yeah. I asked for your opinion.
I think that I'm not saying that there haven't been any conflicts. Absolutely, there have been. And one of the things that Crissy Field Dog Group and especially Fort Fenson Dog Walkers have done is to address those with the Park Service. You know, we meet on a fairly regular basis with specific GGNRA staff. For example, there's been a horse issue at Fort Funston, and Linda McKay from the Fort Funston Dog Walkers actually have been working just not only with the horse people, but with the U.S. Park Police to come up with, you know, FAQs and, you know, how to address dogs and horses at Fort Funston. So I'm not saying that there not have been problems, but I think that it's a misperception. And I think that there is a coexistence that does happen at, you know, within the GGNRA, and that's the protection of natural resources and having responsible dog ownership.
All right, Brent, I want to bring you in a moment, but first, Howard Levitt, just respond, if you would, to what Martha is saying. And obviously, you hear from everybody, not just the dog walkers, but kids, families, naturalists, and so on. So
we do. We over the years, of course, we hear the viewpoints of the entire spectrum of users of the park. There are people in the park who feel that really we ought not to put any regulations or restrictions on dog use of any kind. On the other end, we have people who say, why would you even consider allowing dogs in this area? And so our job, and it's a challenge that we willingly accept, it's the business we're in, is to try to create some balance around that at the same time as we're protecting resources for the future. And I want to give a little shout out to Martha and her group and the responsible folks up at Fort Funston, too. We've had a lot of help and assistance, and they've done a good job in trying to help us manage a pretty difficult situation.
Brent Plater, from your group's perspective, the Wild Equity Institute, I assume that you're most concerned about protecting the natural environment, but fill me in a little bit on that. What exactly is your perspective?
The interesting thing about this issue is that it has impacts on a wide variety of different park user groups and interests. It's not just the natural environment, but also guide dog users have been impacted by off-leash dogs at the park. There was a study in 2003 that found 89% of guide dog users nationally have had their dogs interfered with by off-leash dogs. 42% of them have had their dogs attacked by off-leash dogs. And so it becomes an accessibility problem when the park service is permitting off-leash dogs to roam in particular areas. It's a de facto exclusion for people with guide dogs. There was a study by Dr. Nina Roberts at San Francisco State that came out just a few years ago that found disproportionate impacts on minority groups, primarily Asian and Latinos, who felt that they were not included in the park programming when off-leash dogs were roaming in parts of the park that they like to use. And of course, we have this incredible diversity of endangered species in the GGNRA, more endangered species in this national park than any other national park in the continental United States. And that's an indication that our relationship with the landscape needs to be repaired. And the activities we do at the park, including off-leash dog walking, have some pretty severe impacts on species like western snowy plover, mission blue butterfly, especially at Crissy Field. I mean, just about a year ago, they enclosed the wildlife protection area with a fence. They had put that fence about 200 feet east, further than they had planned to do, and folks demanded that it be moved during the season in which the birds were roosting, and they split. I mean, the snowy plovers up and left, and they didn't come back the rest of the year. So they're really on a short leash, these birds and the endangered species. And if we don't act carefully with them, if we don't give them a little bit of moral consideration, they're not going to stick around for future generations to enjoy.
Howard Levitt, Martha Walters used the phrase responsible dog walkers, and I'm sure that most dog walkers, dog owners, are responsible, but you undoubtedly, like with any group of folks, you're going to have some who are not as responsive. How big a problem, when you think of the problem that is caused by dogs, to the extent that there is a problem, how much of it is because of the owners?
Well, I think you might say that all the problems of the dogs would be the problems of the owners. We have had reported cases of conflicts, dog-on-dog conflicts, dog-on-child conflicts, dog-on-bird conflicts. We try to keep track of that. So I'd say that in terms of the way in which dogs kind of reflect the viewpoints of their owners, dogs and owners are pretty well tied together.
So you're saying that if all owners were responsible and had their dogs under voice command, there wouldn't be a need for more specific rules?
Well, no, not exactly. There are areas in the park where we have species of concern. Brent mentioned some of the array of species that we have in the park. And our job really is to try to assure that those species are protected at the same time as we try to balance the needs and desires of a full spectrum of park visitors.
I think we're going to open the phone lines a little early this morning because undoubtedly, this, as I said at the top, this is one of those issues that a lot of people have thoughts about because they are dog owners or pet lovers or use the parks. So let's give out the phone number here. It's 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can also email your comments to forum@kqed.org. Martha Walters, as you have participated in these discussions over the years, to what extent do you think that a consensus has developed that is resulting in these proposals?
Well, from what I've seen from – are you talking about the draft environmental impact statement?
Yes.
Well, we're very concerned about what the Park Service's preferred alternative is. It's proposes significant changes that we think are overly restrictive for dog walking within the GGNRA. I think it's not balanced.
Overly restrictive how?
Well, let's use Crissy Field as an example. Currently at Crissy Field, according to the 1979 pet policy, dogs are allowed under voice control at East and Central beaches. There's a seasonal restriction at West Beach due to the presence of the snowy plover, which we support. And dogs are allowed off-leash on the grassy airfield on the promenade. And according to their proposal, the preferred alternative, dogs would not be allowed at East Beach, at West Beach, just a small portion of the grassy airfield. Dogs would have to be on leash on the promenade, and the only place where dogs can be on leash at the beach is at Central Beach, and that could be a little bit of a problem during high tide during winter. There's no beach. So I actually think that it poses greater conflict in the long run.
Brent Plater, what about you? You also have participated in these conversations. I mean, do you feel like that all sides are at a good point now to sort of hone in on what the final rules are going to look like, or is there still a lot of conflict?
Well, I think underlying this debate, on the one hand, I look at this debate and I think, I can't believe the Park Service just spent 2,000-plus pages trying to address leash laws in the federal park. I mean, if they spent this much effort trying to make the park carbon neutral, we'd probably have a big chunk of our carbon solution solved, our carbon problem solved. So on the one hand, it does seem a little bit absurd that we're spending all this time and resources on the issue because it's not the most important environmental issue. It's certainly not even the most important issue for animal welfare. There are many issues that are far more important than this. At the same time, it is almost impossible to reach consensus on this issue because people approach it from very different fundamental moral bases. It is a classic public policy problem in that sense. There are people who approach it from a very libertarian perspective. They feel that it is their individual right to run their dog off leash without restriction, and the government doesn't have any business telling them otherwise. And there are other people who approach it very differently, who think about it as a communitarian issue or a problem that we have to think about in terms of our impact overall on the rest of the people who use the park. And it is very clear. We have decades of evidence now that off-leash dogs impact other people repeatedly at the park. And it's not just, as Howard said, endangered species and other people, but also other dogs. There were at least, I think, 45 dogs that fell off the cliff at Fort Funston in 07 and 08. That's in the plan. You can read it yourself. There are dogs that are running into the street, into traffic, being hit by cars. Literally hundreds of dogs from the inception of the GGNRA have been impacted negatively. And there is a simple solution to this, Scott, a very simple solution. What you do is you enclose off-leash dog play areas with a physical boundary, and that will ensure that our dogs remain safe and people get to choose when they want to have that off-leash experience, not have it imposed upon them.
Martha Walters.
Well, I think what Brent is proposing is completely untenable and unrealistic. I think we need to be very pragmatic about this whole issue. People are going to still walk their dogs in all three counties for the next generation. And I think we just need to be as practical as possible. And what Brent is saying, I don't know how many, hundreds of thousands of dogs have walked over time within the GGNRA. And what he's pointing out is an extremely small percentage of, dog incidences.
All right. I want to bring our listeners in now. Again, the number to call, 866-733-6786. And good morning, Sally in San Francisco. You're on Forum.
Hi. I just wanted to make the point that dogs have only ever been allowed off-leash on 1% of the GGNRA's land. So it's not like people are asking for huge amounts. We want to walk everywhere. It's only ever been 1% of the land. And with the preferred alternative, it'll be significantly less than that. Also, dog walking is probably one of the most diverse group of people. You go to Fort Funston or Crissy, and you're going to see seniors, kids, the disabled, every ethnic group, every social economic level. I don't know any other outdoor activity, recreational activity that you're going to see that. And the final question I would make or comment I would make is that Where are all these people and dogs supposed to go if they all get kicked out of the GGNRA? They're going to go into the city parks, the neighborhood parks. Huge environmental impact on city parks, and I don't think anybody's thinking about that.
All right, Sally, thanks so much for the call. Howard Levitt, she mentioned, the caller mentioned several of these other constituencies, seniors, kids, bicyclists, disabled folks also. How difficult is it to find, are they irreconcilable to a certain extent?
I don't think they're irreconcilable, and I think our draft plan proposal tries to create a balance, really, so that people can have a variety of experiences in the park. If you're coming to the park to have an experience that doesn't include dogs, that should be an opportunity for you. If you're coming to the park to enjoy the park with your dog, that should be an opportunity. And I want to say that we recognize the passion around this issue. You can, and when you hear Martha and you hear Brent, you understand that there are strong passions on all sides of the issue. We need to create a balance around that. At the same time, we need to protect resources.
Brent, what about Sally's point, the caller's point, that the vast majority of land in the GGNRA is not accessible to dogs off-leash now, and this would even restrict it further?
Well, the park at the GGNRA has the most is the most accessible national park in the country for dogs. And the places that are in this plan, the 21 units that are being looked at by the GGNRA, are the places where the vast majority of user experiences occur. So even if it is a small percentage of land overall, it's where everybody is. I mean, there isn't a place that you can go in the GGNRA, anything that will come off the top of your head, and have an experience where dogs aren't roaming off leash. So, you know, it's kind of an unusual metric to use for that purpose. And, you know, there are this is kind of a wedge issue in almost any and it's also a wedge issue within dog owners. I mean, we have support for leash law enforcement at the GGNRA from groups like the ASPCA, PETA, Dogs Deserve Better. I mean, there are very serious consequences on dogs when you run dogs off leash without safeguards in place like appropriate fencing.
I want to go back to the phones, but a quick comment from you, Martha.
Yeah, I'd actually like to mention that the San Francisco SPCA and Marin Humane Society absolutely support what we're trying to do, responsible dog ownership in the GGNRA. I just want to mention something. In Marin County, I believe that there's 6 or 7 beaches. I may be incorrect. I'm sorry, Brent, but there's only 2 that are available for any kind of responsible off-leash right now, and that's Muir Beach and Rodeo Beach. So it's not everywhere people go. For example, Tennessee Valley is a perfect example where dogs are not allowed, and that's great. I think that's a very important thing for people to have that if they want it.
All right, let's try to get a quick comment here from another caller. Cynthia is on the line in San Francisco, and we're coming up to a break, so if you could get your question in quickly.
Yeah, actually one comment and one question. The question is, do we have any statistics about disabled people being impacted or the blind being impacted by their guide dogs in the San Francisco parks, not just nationwide? And then secondly, I have lived here since before the Golden Gate Park was formed. And part of the original discussions were that the dog off-leash areas that were currently in effect at that time in the late 70s were going to be left in perpetuity. So I'm a little bit startled to see that that's not how that's been interpreted.
Okay, thanks for the call. Brent, you want to respond to those points?
There have been some attacks by...
I'm sorry. Oh. I meant to say Howard.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
Go ahead, Howard. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have had reports and examples in cases where people with disabilities have had encounters with dogs that haven't exactly been positive encounters. But the reason we're moving to our draft plan today, or actually the plan was released on Friday for 90-day comment, and we encourage your listeners to go online at www.nps.gov/GOGA to weigh in on this issue.
Okay, we're going to have much more to talk about in the coming half hour. What dogs should and should not be able to do in the GGNRA. And the number to call, 866-733-6786. 866-733-6786. Or you can email us. It's forum@kqed.org. I'm Scott Schaefer here this week for Michael Krasny. Stay with us. And welcome back to Forum. Scott Schaefer here this week for Michael Krasny. In this hour, we're talking about dogs in the Golden Gate National Recreation Area. There is a proposal to change the rules, and the public is being asked to give their comments over the next 3 months or so. And joining us this hour, Howard Levitt from the GGNRA, also Brent Plater from the Wild Equity Institute, and Martha Walters from the Crissy Field Dog Group. And joining us right now by phone is Bob Planthold, who is chair of the California Pedestrian Advisory Committee. Bob Planthold, welcome.
Thank you.
Give us a sense of where your group is coming from on all this and how you feel about the proposals that are being put forward.
Well, like Brent and Martha, I'm also somebody who is on that negotiated rulemaking committee. I guess I'd say people are forgetting that diversity means responding to people really unlike yourselves. And so I'm disabled. I'm also a single parent. I've had the experience of taking small kids, toddlers, to parks and rec centers, playgrounds, Ocean Beach, the Presidio, and so forth. People may say, well, there was a court decision that said thus and so, and we were told that it'd last forever. They're ignoring laws change reality of the experience.
What exactly do, when you say folks who are disabled, and we had a call about that a little while ago, what are some of the issues that come up with dogs? And again, isn't this really a question of the owners having control of the dogs, either voice control or on leash?
Well, again, the dog walkers are a responsible group, but not everybody is responsible. And that's the reason there needs to be some sort of law or regulation. There needs to be some sort of control so that those who aren't professional dog walkers, who aren't part of any of these organized groups, who may be the party people who were out at Ocean Beach, that they do not cause problems. There are people who have service dogs, and their dogs can't be really that readily allowed to be jumped on by other dogs. So if there's an off-leash area, it needs to be, as Brent is saying, somehow carefully noticed, visibly restricted. It's especially troubling if you have a guide dog, because it costs tens of thousands of dollars to train. And if a guide dog is injured for whatever reason, that person can be lessened in their mobility.
Howard Levitt, how common do you hear comments like that?
We hear comments like this from time to time, and we have over the years. And again, we have a variety of users. People come to the park with a huge array of needs. We have responsible users. We have users who aren't as responsible. And that's the joy and challenges of managing a national park.
And Bob mentioned professional dog walkers. Are there specific regulations being proposed aimed at them?
Yes, in our preferred alternative, we do have a recommendation related to professional dog walking, and that is there would be a limit of 6 dogs per dog handler, maximum. From an individual or a professional dog walker can bring up to 3 dogs into the park. Between 3 and 6, we are going to institute a permit system.
And Martha, does that seem reasonable to you?
Yes, actually, we do support that.
Yeah. And in terms – yeah, go ahead.
I was
Bob.
Wanting to make another point. That is, the ADA, when passed in 1990, said people with disabilities have to have access to all programs. The point from this is that just because there was some regulation by a magistrate in 79 does not mean it is in perpetuity. People with disabilities have to have all the comfort, all the recreational possibilities that you, Scott, or Brent, or Martha have. And in that sense, GGNRA has to respond to making us safe, making us comfortable, making us equal co-participants. And I don't want to say just people with disabilities. You got to think about 4-year-old kids.
Sure.
Or elementary school kids. They also have to be accounted for, accommodated, responded to. Yeah. And let's face it, 7-year-old yeah. kids may not have judgment or speed like you do to get out of the way if there is a problem.
Howard Levitt, your thoughts.
Bob's making a good point, and I think this was, again, the balance we were trying to create.
All right. Thanks so much for the call, Bob. We've got some other listeners who want to participate here. Let's go now to Keith in Oakland. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
Sure. Go ahead.
I'd like to... I'd like to emphasize that dog walking in the GGNRA is an important recreational activity for people. It's the people who have the right to be there, not the dogs. A closed pen does not allow for a walk, an active outdoor exercise recreation walk. And the GGNRA should provide for this recreational activity as it does for many others. The small amount of land that's now open to dog walkers is barely sufficient as it is, and the proposed plan destroys an important recreational activity for thousands of citizens' taxpayers, those of us who actually pay for and own the park. There's no reason that we can't continue to do the kind of walking we've been doing now, up till now, from 1979 until now, and still allow for all of the other needs in the GGNRA.
All right, Keith, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your thoughts about that. Howard, I don't envy you. You obviously have a lot of needs to balance.
We do. But again, that's what we're paid to do. That's the job of the National Park Service. We reviewed 21 different areas of the park, including virtually all the major visitor destinations, including areas that people had been bringing their dogs over the years, 21 areas. In 20 areas under our proposal, dogs would continue to be welcome. We also have established within that welcoming, there are 7 specific areas where dogs would be permitted off-leash under voice control.
Martha?
But in the preferred alternative that the Park Service puts forth, in those 21 areas, and specifically in 14 of those areas, there are radical changes which would significantly reduce the areas in which that dogs could be walked off-leash with their owners.
Brent, a quick comment from you, then we're going to go to the listeners.
Well, I think what we can do to solve this problem is figure out a way to keep uses separate that want to be separate. And there are ways you can design enclosed dog play areas, including areas on trails that will give people the opportunity to walk in a specific direction or take a hike with their dog. I mean, for example, in Homestead Valley or even Oakwood Valley, there are trails that are bounded by physical barriers just naturally. You put a double gate at the end, fence a particular area where there might be an opportunity for a dog to, you know, get off the trail in those specific locations. You got yourself a very safe, very useful dog play area that also allows people who come to the park to choose to enter that area if they desire or hike somewhere else if they don't want to have that experience.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Mimi in Oakland, good morning.
Yes, good morning. I am literally under the weather. I would be at the beach today. I've gone to Ocean Beach, and there it's a large area, and the dogs run. I don't really feel like my enjoyment of the beach is impacted there. But Chrissy Field, I went there 3 years ago, and it's a smaller area, and I felt that the people who had their dogs off-leash felt entitled. And I couldn't even sit on the beach. I couldn't really enjoy the area for the dogs running everywhere. And again, it's a question of a smaller area and just the sheer number of dogs off-leash. And these dogs weren't under voice command.
Howard Leavitt, how much time does the GGNRA have to deal with this issue on a daily basis? I mean, to enforce regulations, to give citations, to talk to people. I mean, it seems like you could spend 24/7 doing this if you had the resources, which of course you don't.
Managing dogs is an issue for us, and actually creating a workable, understandable, enforceable, and practical plan that's consistent with what it means to manage a national park area in an urban area is the ultimate challenge. But visitor use and providing some understanding and clarity around it and balance within it is part of our job, as is protecting resources, as is maintaining facilities. It's a big job managing a park.
All right. Thanks for the call, Mimi. Again, the number to call, 866-733-6786. Got a lot of email this morning. Let me read a few of them. Grover writes, in many communities, there are fenced dog park areas used exclusively for dogs and their owners. The best ones have areas for large dogs, separate ones for small dogs. In this fenced environment, dogs are not wandering off leash, nor are there many dog-on-dog problems. Can we have fenced and size-segregated dog parks at Chrissy Field? Howard?
Our proposal for Chrissy Field, it's an interesting proposal, the proposal of size-related areas. And I really encourage Grover to go online at www.nps.gov/goga and record that comment. It's an interesting one. These are the kinds of comments we need to hear. At Chrissy, we have two areas that are available for off-leash dog walking under voice control: Middle Beach, the major stretch of the beach at Chrissy, as well as half of the very large historic airfield.
Martha Walters, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think it's just the reverse, frankly. I think that you have, as I said before, Chrissy Field was designed and constructed to address off-leash dog issues, and it has been very successful. There are fenced post and cable fences around the plant, the plants at Chrissy Field, the dune areas, and there's also a vegetative barrier around the marsh. It's working. So I think it's just the opposite. You know, you want to protect those natural resources. And I actually do want to address one other issue that has been prominent, and that's basically the GGNRA's negligence about allowing any kind of dog walking access in San Mateo. San Mateo has a lot of open space, and it's not a rural environment. I mean, literally, the entrances to the areas are right adjacent to where people are living. And there are a lot of responsible people who walk their dogs. And I think that the GGNRA needs to review about what their preferred alternative is regarding San Mateo areas.
Some email. Jan writes, I'd like to point out that the GGNRA is a recreational area, not a park or wilderness area. Currently, only 1% of this area is allocated to dogs off-leash. Statistically, there are about 10,000 dogs in GGNRA each day, 3.6 million each year. By GGNRA numbers, there were only 478 dog-related incidents each year, not a large percentage. Fair to say, Howard?
Well, I want to clarify one point. Golden Gate National Recreation Area is a national recreation area, but it is part of the 394-unit national park system. All of the units of the national park system are governed by a set of consistent rules. The rules around dog walking in all national parks is that dogs, where they're permitted, must be kept on a leash. Our plan, however, recognizes some unique characteristics of our park: our proximity to the urban area, the tradition of use that predated the park, and so it includes within it an array of alternatives, among them off-leash dog use, and that is actually unique among any national parks, in any national park unit in the country.
All right, back to the phones now. Maria in Oakland. Good morning. Maria.
I have a small, timid, shy dog, and I simply cannot take her to Chrissy Field because there are dogs of every size, shape, and kind coming up to her and really, really frightening her. And so I, as an on-leash dog walker, am precluded from bringing her to those areas. I just don't understand why the compromise of a fenced-off area is, like, not just readily apparent and agreeable to folks like your guest, whose name I'm forgetting here. It just seems to me that that is a simple middle place solution. I've seen dogs chasing other dogs into the street. I've seen dogs chasing birds all over Chrissy Field. It just is not a place I can go because of the situation.
All right. Thanks very much for the call. Martha, what about that idea of, the little dog, the Chihuahuas or whatever dog it might be that, is going to be intimidated just frolicking around with these other or being chased by bigger dogs?
Well, I actually have a small dog, and sometimes she gets intimidated, but I still take her to Chrissy Field, and it seems to be fine. You know, there are other areas where you can take your dog. If she's uncomfortable, I apologize for that. I can't apologize for other people's dogs, giving her a hard time. I'm sorry about that. But I think that a fenced area at Chrissy Field is untenable. It's not manageable. And one of the things that's so incredibly important about Chrissy Field, it has a large carrying capacity, and we need to recognize that. And again, it was designed and constructed to allow for 70 acres of off-leash recreation. And I think that people, if she's uncomfortable there, then maybe she should go to the Presidio. Maybe there are other areas to go to.
Brent Plater, it seems like the passion here really seems to be around either for dogs or, if not against dogs, for more restrictions on dogs. Do you feel like the issues that you care most about are, kind of second fiddle to everything else?
Well, I think what's interesting about the debate Excuse me, Scott. What's interesting about the debate is that there is a solution that can address all these issues simultaneously, whether you're concerned about the impacts on other dogs, as the last caller was, or on disabled users, or on the environment, and that's an enclosed off-leash dog play area. As Martha's mentioned at Crissy Field, they're already enclosing the natural areas at Crissy Field, and those can work. But the problem is the burden needs to be placed on the people conducting the activity causing the harm, not on the resource. And the way you do that is you create these areas that are off-leash dog play areas that are themselves enclosed so that the rest of the public can choose to enter those areas at their own free will, not have it imposed upon them whenever they decide to use this national park that's supposed to be available for everyone.
All right, let's go back to the phones. And in Berkeley, Juliet is on the phone. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I wanted to say I do a lot of work in the environmental field. I'm also a big animal rights advocate, and I am a huge proponent of really well-constructed, off-leash, enclosed, fully enclosed off-leash dog areas. And I think one of the issues that I've really seen across all of these open space areas, whether they're in Golden Gate National Recreation Area or otherwise, is that you do have a huge variety of users. That's wonderful. But those users include human users. They include sensitive and endangered species. They include all kinds of plants and animals that we do want to protect and that our national park mission is there to protect. And dog owners are a very small percentage of that total user group in terms of their numbers, but they have a tremendous disproportionate negative impact on all of those resources. And I think the solution of off-leash fenced areas is a great compromise that really allows people who love dogs like me and people who love animals like me to have their animals in a safe place. But as Brent Plater has been saying, to not impose this on everybody else. I actually find Crissy Field a very difficult place to go to because of the dog use. And there are so many other users there that you're impacting with those dogs. And the idea that somebody who has a small dog who's intimidated has just been told by, I believe it's Martha, that she needs to go somewhere else. That's tough luck for her. I think that's exactly the problem, that if we have to say things like that, there's something very wrong.
All right, Juliet.
I think voice control is a great concept, but it doesn't work in practice.
All right, thanks so much for the call, Juliet. Howard Levitt, to what extent do you see this process as a way or a place for dog owners to talk to others like Juliet? Are they all really talking to you at this point? Or, you know, to what extent are they talking to each other?
Well, there's been a public dialogue among dog users and non-dog users in the spectrum of park visitors over the years. And it was alluded to earlier that in 2006, 2007, the park participated with a broad range of stakeholders to see if we could together create a rule that was a consensus rule for dog management in the park. We learned a lot. We got to know each other better. We understood each other's positions. But in the end, consensus couldn't be achieved. Nevertheless, some of the outcome of that is reflected in our plan. And Julia's call, again, highlights the need for people to go online and register their comments. The lines are open. We really do need to hear from the public because it's at the draft phase. And we've learned now in almost 40 years of managing this national park in an urban area that a plan will inevitably change and change for the better between the draft stage and the final stage. It'll be improved and refined.
And now is the time to weigh in. Emiliana in San Francisco, you're next. Good morning.
Hello?
Hi, you're on. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to address the issue of, you know, the responsibility that we have to the dogs. So a lot of dogs in San Francisco, and for a lot of them, a small enclosed dog run area is simply not a feasible option. And I realize that, you know, there are a number of non-responsible dog walkers in the parks, but a lot of us really are responsible and want to have a space in which not only our dogs can exercise, but also in which we can exercise and enjoy ourselves. And, you know, not having that space, I think, ultimately would result in big issues. I mean, what if our dogs don't get the proper exercise? What then does that do for them? And, and the way they carry themselves, you know, as a part of society, which is essentially what we've made them. You know, don't we have a responsibility to give them that space to be animals, to be dogs, to behave like them? Well, obviously under control.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Martha, to what, we're, of course, we're focusing on the GGNRA, but to what extent do folks with dogs also go to their neighborhood park or Golden Gate Park?
Oh, I think a lot of people do. I live in San Rafael, and I know that there's a lot of open space in Marin County. And, you know, there are restrictions, you know, about how many dogs you can take. But there's also things like voice and sight control. And, again, people are fairly responsible. I know people are going to say fairly is not adequate enough, but I would say 98% is pretty darn good. And it is a dispersion issue if things, if spaces within the GGNRA gets restricted.
Some more email now. Jennifer writes, as a longtime walker at parks throughout the city and GGNRA, I find walking at early morning hours a great way to avoid daytime park goers. Matthew in San Francisco writes, the GGNRA director has repeatedly used the phrase, create a balance. Why is the situation now unbalanced? Do the regulations now favor one side or the other, dog owners or non-dog owners? Howard, what do you say to that?
That's a good comment. Right now, the system is confusing, controversial, and has led to conflict. And that's really what drove us to create a rule that would be understood, consistent, enforceable, and very importantly, balance conservation and resource protection, which is a, sort of the fundamental dual mission of the National Park Service.
But to put to his point, is it out of balance now? And if so, how?
It's out of balance by virtue of the heat and passion around this issue. As you can tell from the callers in, the feelings run high on all sides, and that plays out actually in the park. So the time has come really to try to create that balance. And I use the term balance because in every case, virtually across the park, as we looked at the range of alternatives from the existing situation to one that would be highly restrictive or conversely highly permissive of dog use, we tended to go toward the middle and create a balance consistent with our mission and consistent with the challenges of managing the park.
Another email here from Nathan who writes, parks are for all, but I mostly see dog owners and walkers acting with arrogance, entitlement, and disrespect for others. I've had to yell at owners to leash their dog who's chasing endangered birds about. As far as the list for those whose needs the park must serve, for example, citizens, children, plants, and so on, only in a bizarro world do people put the needs of dogs above all else. And then another listener writes in, I'm a dog owner. I've lived in three different cities on the peninsula in the past 2 years. Every city provides poop bags in parks 100% of the time. I walk my dog. There's more than one poop pile unpicked by a dog owner. It makes me mad that as a non-dog owner, I suggest cities should use poop cams to catch these people and find them like red light runners. How big an issue is that, Brent Plater, in your mind?
Well, it's a small issue, but it's the fundamental underlying problem that really is highlighted by even the poop issue, and that's, you know, people approach the park very differently. There's, you know, you approach it with either sort of an individual entitlement to conduct some activity you want to choose, or you think reflectively about how you impact others, including other endangered species. And, you know, Scott, there are in the plan over 150, well, I think 150, just under 150 off-leash dog play areas identified in the three counties in which the park is found, San Mateo, San Francisco, and San Mateo County. There are more off-leash dog play areas in San Francisco per square mile than any city in the country. There are plenty of places for people to run their dog off-leash. They don't need to do it in places that impact others so negatively. Unfortunately, the preferred alternative that the Park Service has put together doesn't have any enclosed off-leash dog play areas proposed. There isn't a single one, despite the fact that hundreds of comments were submitted requesting that to be part of the preferred alternative. That's really the simplest solution. We create sort of enclosed areas for people to run their dog off-leash that separates the impact from the resource, and it lets people make the choice to enter those areas on their own, not have it imposed upon them.
Martha, a quick question from you, and then we're going to try to get another – or a comment from you, rather.
Sure. I would just say, needless to say, we absolutely are completely opposed to any kind of enclosed areas for dogs in the GGNRA. Second of all, Chrissy Field Dog Group really takes responsible dog ownership very seriously. we have a non-dog owner person who goes to Chrissy Field every day and fills all 17 poop dispensers with plastic bags. And we really take this whole issue very seriously. We like to keep it as clean as possible. And I think that people need to understand that the Park Service actually, you know, I mean, we really imparted with the Park Service to have these dispensers there because we knew it would be a potential problem, and we're taking responsibility for that.
Short on time, but Brent Plater, you know, as you look at the various things that are on the table here, do you have some bottom lines? I mean, you talked about the segregating the areas for dogs and everyone else, but you know, are there one or two things that you really hope get adopted in these proposals?
Overall, I think the preferred alternative provides a balanced approach to off-leash dog management, yet it doesn't provide the safeguards we need at each of the places where off-leash dog activity will occur to keep our pets safe, people safe, and certainly wildlife free from impacts. If they fix that issue, we can ensure that going forward, we'll have much more enjoyable recreational activities at the GGNRA for everybody.
And Martha, it seems like your group is not happy with the preferred alternative. Are there some? What's a bottom line issue for your group?
I think that the bottom line issue that it is very overly restrictive, and that the Park Service needs to be realistic about the impact of not having the dogs there.
And Howard Levitt, we're at the very beginning of this process in terms of from the perspective of public comment. Where does it go from here?
Well, we go from here. It goes to the. We're in the public comment period. The public comment period ends on April 14th. We then review the comments, and that will take quite some time because we expect a huge number of comments. And then ultimately, we will issue a final environmental impact statement and proposed dog plan that will have a preferred alternative. From there, it goes to formal rulemaking, and that process is expected to last probably 2 years.
Okay, and then just quickly, if you would read out the website again, people can go to?
We need to hear from a broad array of visitors at www.nps.gov/GOGA for Golden Gate.
All right, very good. Howard Levitt from the Golden Gate National Recreation Area, thanks to you. Thanks also to Brent Plater from the Wild Equity Institute and Martha Walters from the Chrissy Field Dog Group. And before that, earlier in the hour, Planthold, California Pedestrian Advisory Committee. Forum is produced by Kevin Guillory and Judy Campbell, with production assistance from Patricia Yallen and Christina Russo. Our intern is Suki Lewis. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Forum's executive producer is Raul Ramirez. Our engineer today is Howard Gelman. I'm Scott Schaefer, here for Michael Krasny. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.